In Devonard's Greenwich Mean Time, this is News Desk in the World Service of the BBC with Peter Baldauer. The headlines. There's been more violence in Algeria, where about 100 people have lost their lives in new massacres. 3 days after a landslide engulfed the ski resort in Australia, a man has been brought out alive by rescue workers. A delegation from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations has had talks in Cambodia aimed at resolving the political conflict there. The former militia leader in Liberia, Charles Taylor, is today being inaugurated as the country's new civilian president. Also in this program, the latest from the World Athletics Championships in Athens. Newspaper reports in Algeria say anti-government guerrillas armed with swords and guns killed up to 100 people in 3 separate attacks. The killings took place between Tuesday and Friday in Blida and Labar, 2 areas in what the Algerians call the Triangle of Death, south of Algiers, and also at Ain Depla in the west. The attacks are the latest in a series that began 5 years ago when the authorities cancelled elections, which the now-banned Islamic Salvation Front appeared poised to win. Here's our North Africa correspondent, Heba Sala.
As if the Congo had its ultimate military backs, authorities have said nothing about the latest wave of brutal to hit the countryside. More than 500 people have been killed since the country held parliamentary elections in early June. But so far, the authorities have neither provided an explanation of these massacres nor announced any measures to stop them. It's presumed the killings have been carried out by the armed Islamic group, the DIA, which has pledged threatened to commit more of what it describes as spectacular actions. But very little is known about the DIA, which has been repeatedly denounced by the main illegal Islamic faction, the Islamic Salvation Front. Self-reports in recent weeks spoke of a large-scale government offensive against DIA hideouts in the same areas where the massacres are taking place. Again, there was no confirmation from the authorities, who, despite censoring the press, seemed to want such stories to be leaked. The killings may be a clear of defiance and the part of the DIA, which has yet denied press reports that its leader, Ansar Zerabri, was killed during the latest fighting with the government. Despite having a newly elected assembly, politics in Algeria appear to be completely divorced from the everyday reality of the violence to which the population is subjected. With the exception of the opposition Socialist Forces Front, which says it's outraged by the silence of the authorities, none of the factions in the assembly have made an issue of the slaughter.
Our North Africa correspondent, Heba Zaka. The Palestinian leader, Yasser Arafat, travels to Egypt today for talks on the latest Middle East peace setback, his authority weakened by a crisis in his own government. All but 2 of his 18 ministers yesterday offered their resignations, following a report by a Palestinian parliamentary committee alleging widespread corruption and mismanagement in the administration. Mr. Arafat's office said the resignations would be considered at an appropriate time. Rage Omar reports from Jerusalem.
Now that virtually his entire cabinet have tendered their resignations following the damning report by the Palestinian parliament, the decision about what to do next lies with Yasser Arafat. Although the Legislative Council has given him 1 month to sack all of his ministers, the Palestinian leader has expressed his determination to act soon. That is certainly the dominant mood amongst many Palestinians, angered and frustrated at what many see as the squandering of scarce financial resources amidst the suffering of many ordinary Palestinians who've seen little improvement in their lives since the peace process was signed. Such feelings have also revealed a resentment amongst Palestinians towards those advisers and political associates of Yasser Arafat who came back to Gaza from the long years in exile in Tunis with the Palestinian leader. Furthermore, the issue has revealed significant differences within the cabinet, which, if unchecked, could bring further political damage to the Palestinian Authority. The Transport Minister, Ali Awasme, has said that he and 15 other ministers offered their resignations to try to shore up confidence in the Palestinian Authority. But the senior Palestinian official, Nabil Sha'af, who refused to tender his resignation and is one of the ministers singled out in the report, has vehemently attacked its findings, describing it as a pack of lies. But after Israel's security measures in the wake of the recent suicide bomb attacks, Yasser Arafat will find it difficult to make sweeping changes to his cabinet for fear of how that will be read by his own people, at a time when many want to see unity within the Palestinian leadership.
Berge Omar in Jerusalem. Almost 3 days after a landslide at an Australian ski resort, a man has been pulled alive from the rubble. A big cheer went up as he was lifted clear. Rescue workers had spent 12 hours trying to reach him. The man, a ski instructor, is said to be in a serious condition, suffering from the effects of freezing temperatures. Michael Peshaw reports from Fredberg.
Rescue workers working on other parts of the mountain hold stop to watch Stuart's diver being lifted clear. There's a sense of euphoria in the village. Friends and well-wishers watching the rescue from the bottom of the mountain all let out a loud cheer as they saw the stretcher being carried across some mud and rubble towards a waiting ambulance. This diver is known to be suffering from acute hypothermia. His condition is said to be serious but stable. It spent nearly 3 days alone, buried under tons of debris, with a huge concrete slab 45 centimeters from his face. It had to endure below freezing temperatures in soaking wet clothes. His morale, though, is said to be fantastic. Rescue workers handed him down a torch several hours ago, and he's been liking the way the firemen digging their way towards him through the debris. The cocoon of concrete, which saved his life, also delayed his rescue. Workers had to burrow underneath to get him out. The overall rescue operation, though, is far from over. 13 people are still missing. The hope is that if one person has been able to survive, there may still be others.
Michael Peshart in Fredberg, Australia. A delegation of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, ASEAN, has met the Cambodian leader Hun Sen in a second attempt to solve the political and military conflict in Cambodia. Hun Sen removed his co-prime minister, Prince Norodom Sihamoni, last month, but the issue of his possible return has not been resolved. Meanwhile, reports from the Cambodian border with Thailand say that about 500 troops loyal to Prince Norodom Sihamoni have fled into Thailand after fighting with the government troops. Caroline Gluck reports from Phnom Penh on the outcome of the talks.
Briefing reporters after the talk, Indonesia's Foreign Minister Ali Alatas, who headed the ASEAN delegation, said that all sides agreed that the most urgent priority in Cambodia was to halt the armed hostilities between troops loyal to the rival prime ministers and to end the violence. He said that Hun Sen had ordered all military units to try to avoid taking further action. For his part, the prime minister said he believed ASEAN could play an important role by putting pressure on Prince Norodom Sihamoni to stop the fighting and to end what he said was the prince's political and military collaboration with the outlawed rebel group, the Khmer Rouge. All sides agreed on the need to continue with plans for general elections next May. Hun Sen told the delegation that the general election would have no meaning unless they were free and fair and all political parties could take part. But around 20 opposition politicians are currently outside Cambodia, having fled the country in the wake of the military coup. The ASEAN delegation said they'd asked Hun Sen to make a special announcement, making it clear that the government would guarantee them a safe return and that they could freely take part once again in the country's politics without fear of persecution. Other issues, including the return of Prince Ranare to Cambodia and the election of someone to replace him, were discussed but left unresolved. So too was any decision on whether or not Cambodia will eventually be allowed to become a member of the regional grouping. Hun Sen said he understood ASEAN's decision to freeze Cambodia's membership last month, but said he'd like his country to join ASEAN sooner rather than later.
Caroline Gluck in Phnom Penh. Hong Kong has been placed on a typhoon alert as gale force winds approach from the South China Sea. The government has advised the public to stay indoors and take precautions. Schools have been closed and government employees sent home. Many bus and ferry services have been cancelled and several flights either cancelled or diverted. Roads were clogged as people rushed to get home. The Hong Kong Observatory said Typhoon Victor was expected to hit land near the Pearl River estuary at about 16 hours GMT. There's been heavy fighting in Sri Lanka. Military officials say they've repulsed a counterattack by Tamil Tiger rebels in an area north of the government-held town of Lavun. The Defense Ministry spokesman said 14 members of the security forces have been killed and about 30 wounded during several hours of fighting. It said around 300 rebels had been killed. but unconfirmed reports put the government's losses at around 50 dead. Alistair Lawson reports from Colombo.
This is the second day of fighting between the government and Tamil Tiger separatists. On Friday, the government said it killed more than 50 rebels near the town of Nedumkerni. This time, the Tamil Tigers launched a major assault overnight on Friday. The attack was from the west and centered on government positions around the town of Omanthide, which is a few miles north of Bunya. A government statement said that large numbers of Tamil Tigers took part in the attack using mortars, grenades and small arms. The statement says that guerrillas mounted 7 assaults which lasted until the early hours of Saturday morning. It says that helicopters and other aircraft were used to repulse the attack and that more than 100 dead bodies have been recovered by troops. The statement said that another 200 bodies were taken away by the guerrillas. The statement says 14 security force personnel were killed in the latest fighting and that 30 were injured. However, both sides in this ranking war are prone to downplay their own casualties and upgrade those of the enemy. Informed sources say the government has in fact lost nearly 50 personnel and another 50 have been injured. This is the third major counterattack by the Tamil Tigers since the government offensive, known as Shore of Victory, was launched in mid-May.
Alistair Lawson in Colombo. You're listening to Newsdesk in the BBC World Service. A ceremony is to be held today in Liberia to inaugurate the former militia leader Charles Taylor as the new civilian president. About a dozen African heads of state are expected to attend the event. Hundreds of people have been working to give the capital, Monrovia, a facelift. Mr. Taylor won elections which are intended to seal a peace accord ending Liberia's long-running civil war. Here's our former West Africa correspondent, David Bamford.
Charles Taylor today inherits the role he has sought ever since he launched his rebel insurrection against the late President Samuel Doe on Christmas Eve 1989. 7 years of fighting against the government army, West African ECOMOC forces, and later several rival armed factions failed to win him the prize. But the presidential election of July the 19th did confirm his achievements. Attending today's inauguration will be General Sani Abacha, the leader of Nigeria, which did more than any regional power to prevent Mr. Taylor's military takeover, but now accepts his electoral success. Also expected to attend is Colonel Gaddafi of Libya, in whose country Mr. Taylor's military commanders of the now disbanded National Patriotic Front received training in guerrilla warfare. Old enemies have been brought together as Liberians prepare for what they hope will be a peaceful future. Monrovia, pockmarked and badly damaged by the fighting, is festooned with flags. Work gangs have repainted the executive mansion as well as the venue of today's ceremony, the Centennial Hall, which, despite its downtown location, has somehow survived numerous bombardments suffered by the population's capital.
David Bamford. New cracks are appearing in the flood defences in eastern Germany, despite the constant battle by soldiers and rescue workers to shore them up. The Environment Minister in Brandenburg State was pessimistic about the chances of avoiding further flooding. Officials said trees uprooted by the high waters were flowing downstream and slamming into the dikes, which protect vast areas of low-lying farmland. Here's David Robertson in Frankfurt an der Oder at the heart of the flood-affected area.
Weakened areas in the dikes have been identified north of Frankfurt an der Oder. One crack in a section between the villages of Hohenwitzen and Neuwiednitz measures 15 metres long and as much as 10 centimetres in places. Sandbags and concrete are being used to reinforce damaged parts. Trees are being felled to allow helicopters in to assist. Local volunteers have joined soldiers in the operation, knowing that if the dike is breached, their villages would become submerged. Up to 850 square kilometres of low-lying land in the Oderbruch region is at risk. Although river levels have been showing indications of falling, it's only by a few centimetres. The water pressure bearing on the dikes has been constant for more than 2 weeks. These 60-year-old fortifications were never built to withstand such stress. 15,000 people have been evacuated from their homes along the River Oder in the worst flooding in more than a century. Thousands more are being warned they too may have to leave.
David Robertson in Frankfurt an der Oder. Meanwhile, the governments of the Czech Republic and Poland have announced measures to finance the reconstruction needed following the widespread devastation caused by the flooding as the waters there recede. President Clinton has lifted a 20-year ban on the sale of warplanes and other advanced weapons to Latin American countries. Applications for orders will be considered on a case-by-case basis, putting United States policy to Latin America on the same footing as other parts of the world. Chile has been considering buying F-16 fighter aircraft, and critics of the lifting of the ban have warned of the danger of an arms race in the region. Andrew Bolton sent this report from Miami.
The weapons ban was introduced when President Carter was in the White House and military men were running much of Latin America. Now democracy's in place in Latin America, and the U.S. says its partnership with the region has reached what the Clinton administration calls a new level of maturity. The White House says its decision means arms sales to Latin America will now be considered on a case-by-case basis, putting U.S. policy there on the same footing as in other parts of the world. The decision follows an easing of marketing restrictions in April after Chile made it known that it was considering buying up to 18 sophisticated F-16 fighter aircraft. A senior U.S. official said Chile's bid would be the first to be considered and would be considered favorably. But already there's been criticism of the lifting of the ban. Opponents of an end to restrictions say the United States is running the risk of sparking an arms race in the region by introducing a policy which could tip the military balance between Chile and Argentina.
Andrew Bolton in Miami. Two men of Middle Eastern origin have been formally charged in the United States with plotting a bomb attack on the Underground Railway in New York. The two, named as Ghazi Ibrahim Abu Meza and Lafi Halil, were arrested at a flat in the Brooklyn area of the city where police discovered five bombs. Federal investigators said a potential disaster had been averted. There's been speculation that the men are linked to a militant Palestinian group, but investigators said they've not yet established any connection. The men are in hospital recovering from gunshot wounds they received in the police raid. This is Newsdesk in the BBC World Service. A reminder of the main news. Newspaper reports in Algeria say anti-government guerrillas armed with swords and guns killed up to 100 people in three separate attacks. The killings took place between Tuesday and Friday in Blida and Larbar, two areas in what the Algerians call the Triangle of Death, south of Algiers, and also at Ain Defla in the west. The attacks are the latest in a series that began 5 years ago when the authorities cancelled elections which the now outlawed Islamic Salvation Front appeared poised to win. Representatives of left-wing political parties from all over Latin America have converged on the Brazilian city of Porto Alegre, where they are meeting to discuss ways of opposing the free market economic policies that have swept the region in recent years. The Brazilian Workers' Party, which is hosting the event, say the aim is to find what it calls a democratic and popular alternative to monetarist logic. The special forum, which ends on Sunday night, comes at a time when left-wing politicians in many Latin American countries are struggling to regain public support. With more details, here's our Brazil correspondent, Robert Plummer.
The right-wing military regimes that once dominated Latin America have long since disappeared, but at the other end of the political spectrum, the revolutionary spirit dies hard. On Thursday night, the 300 delegates attending the political forum in Porto Alegre began the proceedings with a tribute to the guerrilla leader Che Guevara, who was captured and executed by the Bolivian military nearly 30 years ago. It's understandable that left-wing politicians in Latin America should look to the past before looking to the future. Ever since the Berlin Wall came down, they've had to contend with the same crisis of confidence that has affected their counterparts in other regions of the world. But they've arguably been slower than most in responding to the changing political climate. In the 3 months since Tony Blair became Prime Minister in Britain, he's received a great deal of favorable Latin American media coverage, usually portraying him as a man who offers free market economics with a human face. But for left-wingers in Central and South America, any kind of free market policy amounts to what they call neoliberalism. And that's by far the dirtiest word in their political vocabulary.
Robert Plummer in Sao Paulo. The authorities in Chile say one of the leaders of a controversial German settlement in the south of the country has been detained by police after returning from a brief trip to Argentina. The man, Hartwood Hopp, said to be second in command of the settlement, is being questioned by officials. Its fugitive leader, Paul Schaefer, is wanted on charges of child abuse and tax evasion. Meanwhile, two men who fled from the settlement last weekend have flown to Germany, accompanied by officials from the German embassy in Chile. They had earlier given evidence to a judge investigating the allegations surrounding the German settlement. A crowded bus has crashed in Peru, killing at least 23 passengers and injuring many more. Initial reports said the vehicle's brakes failed as it travelled between the popular tourist centres of Cusco in Peru's southern mountains and Nazca. The frequency of road accidents in the Peruvian Andes has recently led to calls for an overhaul of the country's transport regulations. The Canadian Red Cross says it no longer wants a role in the provision of the country's blood supplies, in the wake of a study which showed that thousands of people were infected with the HIV virus and hepatitis C through blood transfusions in the 1980s. Ian Gunn reports from Vancouver that blood donations have dropped below critical levels in Canada as a result of plummeting public confidence in the blood service.
The decision by the Canadian Red Cross comes just 2 days after the government announced it was stripping the organization of its management role in the country's blood supply. But the health minister had offered the Red Cross the chance to continue collecting blood donations. But in a surprise move, the agency's board of directors said on Friday that it no longer wants any involvement with the country's blood. These developments follow a 3-year commission of inquiry into Canada's blood system. More than 1,400 Canadians were infected with HIV and thousands more with hepatitis C in blood transfusions given in the 1980s. The Red Cross has argued from the start of the investigation that its officers did all they could to safeguard the blood supply, but it has also instigated lengthy legal proceedings to limit the findings of the independent commission. Public confidence in blood safety has now slipped to the point that blood donations have reached critically low levels across the country, even though no one is known to have been infected while giving blood.
Ian Gunn in Vancouver. You're listening to Newsdesk in the BBC World Service. It's now exactly 11:22, Greenwich Mean Time. The Labour government in Britain has appointed an unusually high number of people to sit in the upper chamber of Parliament, the House of Lords. The Prime Minister, Tony Blair, has named 31 new Labour peers, along with 5 from the opposition Conservative Party and 11 from the third party, the Liberal Democrats. The new peers come from business and the arts, as well as politics. Our political correspondent, Tim Franks, reports.
The Prime Minister, Tony Blair, hopes that this honours list will go some way to correcting the imbalance in the House of Lords. Despite Labour's vast majority in the lower house, the House of Commons, there is a large majority of Conservative members in the House of Lords. Although the House of Lords is a weaker, revising chamber, the Conservative tilt has already irritated the government. The 31 new peers who will be submitting themselves to Labour Party discipline come from a wide variety of backgrounds. In typical New Labour fashion, the Prime Minister is said to be delighted that a number are businessmen. There are also representatives from the arts, including the filmmaker David Putnam and the novelist Ruth Rendell. The prominent lawyer, Helena Kennedy, becomes a baroness. As traditionally happens, the former Prime Minister, John Major, has rewarded many of his colleagues in what's called the resignation honours list. Amongst them, the former cabinet ministers, Roger Freeman, David Hunt, Tony Newton and Ian Lang. They all become members of the House of Lords. Labour has pledged to remove the voting rights of hereditary peers. No date has been set for that yet. A fully elected second chamber that never does exist is even further off.
Tim Franks. The Egyptian authorities have turned their attention from fighting Muslim militants to combating hired hitmen. This week, the government decided to extend emergency laws, usually used for political unrest, to also cover organized criminal violence. Emergency laws have been in place since Islamic militants assassinated Egypt's President Anwar Sadat in 1981. The authorities took action after 2 business partners and a leading advertising company tried to settle a dispute using armed thugs. Barbara Pett reports from Cairo.
The violence at Americana advertising firm dominated the media for weeks. A bitter disagreement between the company's main shareholders turned deadly when they brought in thugs to settle the dispute. Men armed with knives and canes invaded Americana's offices in early July, wounding at least 6 policemen and killing a hairdresser who tried to intervene. The government responded quickly to what it called a growing problem of organized criminal violence. The cabinet has extended emergency laws to cover hired hitmen, until Parliament can draft new legislation that toughens penalties for the crime. The emergency laws give the government sweeping powers to detain suspects without trial. So far, they have been used only against drug traffickers and Muslim militants fighting against the state. Hired thugs have long been a part of land disputes in the countryside, but reports suggest that more businessmen and politicians in the cities are using unofficial security services to do their dirty work. Observers say it's difficult to determine how widespread the problem is. Some commentators blame the government for creating a climate that tolerates brutal acts because it's preoccupied with its own harsh clampdown on Islamic militants.
Barbara Pless in Cairo. Sport now, and the first morning of the 6th World Athletics Championships in Athens has been marked by a poor performance from one of the favourites. And one of boxing's most durable characters has died. More details, here's David Coates.
Donovan Bailey, the defending men's 100 metres champion, has looked less than impressive on the opening day in Athens. The Olympic champion had to battle to qualify in his opening heat. And several other top attractions have had a disappointing morning. From Athens, Mike Costello.
A morning of shocks here almost became one of sensation when Donovan Bailey virtually froze on the starting blocks in his first round heat at the men's 100 metres. The defending champion and world record holder eventually qualified in second place, but he left the trackside shaking his head, pausing only to say that he felt fine mentally, but he's obviously worried about his fitness. He's joined in the second round later today by Atto Bolden, Frankie Fredericks, and the American Maurice Green, those four looking likely to contest the three medals. Green ran in the heat before Bailey's and reckons the Canadian will come good when it matters.
You got to treat every race as getting to the next one. As long as you get into the final, that's all that counts. Anything can happen in the final, so you have to make it there first.
Do you think there's going to be a world record here?
Oh, yes. You will have to win a world record to win this race tomorrow.
In the women's 100 metres, Merline Otte, at the age of 37, has made a successful start to what must surely be a last attempt at a major 100 metres title. And just as impressive was Marion Jones, the young American they're calling the female Carl Lewis. But the form book wasn't nearly as reliable elsewhere. Here's Pam Dixon.
Britain's Kelly Holmes, the fastest woman in the world this year, over 1,500 metres, pulled up in her heat with 200 metres to go. She suffered a recurrence of a left Achilles tendon injury. And although the Olympic champion Svetlana Masterkova went through, she's not sure about the next round because of a right ankle problem. The world champion Andrei Abduvaliev has failed to make the medal round in the men's hammer. And also in the field, the Olympic champion Randy Barnes has failed to qualify for the men's shot put final.
And the shot put is one of two gold medals to be decided here in the Olympic Stadium during the evening session. The other is in the men's 20-kilometre walk.
Mike Costello and Pam Dixon reporting from Athens. Johnny Tocco, one of boxing's best-known trainers, has died in Las Vegas. He was 87. Tocco got involved in boxing in his native St. Louis at the age of 12 and operated the ringside gym in Las Vegas for 41 years. He worked with numerous world champions during his seven decades in the sport, including Sonny Liston, Larry Holmes and Michael Doakes. And that's the sport.
David Coles. Now to end the programme, here again are the main points. Reports from Algeria say anti-government guerrillas armed with swords and guns killed about 100 people in three attacks this week. The attacks are the latest in a series of massacres that have claimed thousands of lives. Almost 3 days after a landslide at an Australian ski resort, a man has been pulled alive from the rubble. A big cheer went up as he was lifted clear, after rescue workers spent 12 hours trying to reach him. Six people have already been found dead, and 13 others are still unaccounted for. A delegation from the Association of Southeast Asian Nations has been meeting the Cambodian leader Hun Sen in an effort to solve the political conflict there. And the former Liberian militia leader Charles Taylor is to be installed as the country's civilian president today following his victory in elections last month. About a dozen African heads of state are expected to attend the swearing-in ceremony. I'm Peter Bolgar, and you've been listening to News Desk.